flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
What up, everybody? 10 a.m., District of Columbia, points north, south, east, and west. Brian and I were in Philadelphia last night. We're back in the DMV today. We have so much to discuss, I think. 30,000-foot view, there is so much good news to look at. I think it's okay. I'm not really ready for 30,000-foot view. 24, 48 hours later, after an NFC title game, we can start talking big picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, though, there's a lot to be upset about. I think the refs were bad. I think the turnovers were worse. But I do think the better team won. Philly's been building that team for a long time. They're loaded. We all said, hey, let's see if Jalen Hurts can beat him. He could.
He did.
Hurts was really good. Saquon was really good. Their defense was really good. I hate the final score, B.
Yeah.
I think the final score is not indicative of what that game looked like. Just to give up 50-burger sucks.
Yeah, I mean.
But it is what
it is. I think you have to look at the game. And I think when you look at this game closely, I did a big three before the game. I say play complimentary football.
They didn't.
I said win the turnover battle.
They didn't.
And I said, do your job. And I think when you look at that game, anybody controlling the football, their job is to do your job and hold on to the ball. And you've heard me mention it many a times where I say, don't just look at the opposing team. Look at yourself. And the way to watch Philly attacking the football, they must have seen that they carry the ball very loosely. Because they were punching at every ball. And I understand. You watch people doing it, but they did it so much at different people. And well, the one with McNichols, he just, his guy got blown up, and he ran into it without locking it up.
Dude, I said on that kickoff, I was like, oh, they don't, like, because since Eckler came back from the concussion, he was, I mean, hell, he made second team All-Pro as a kick returner.
Yeah.
Now, they've been kind of choosing their spots with him as the kick returner, and they had Luke and McNichols out there to start, and I was like, huh, I kind of thought we'd get Eckler as a kick returner in these games.
In this game, yeah.
And then after the fumble, it was Eckler, but then later Eckler has a fumble.
Yeah, but they were attacking the ball, and I just say it. In that situation, when you go down and you're coming up, it naturally comes away from your body. And the Eagles did a great job of it. But if you look at that game, it boiled down to turnovers. And I've said it, and I'll say it again. Just because you turn the ball over don't mean you got to give up a touchdown. And they had four turnovers, and they scored four touchdowns off of it. The one where Quinyon Mitchell gets the interception in the end zone, great catch on his part, you know, they went all the way down the field and got a touchdown off of that.
Yeah.
Without Saquon in the game. It was the backup who broke off a big run, and then he ended up going into the end zone. So,
I mean,
you just have to protect.
For the first carry of the game, Saquon goes 60.
Yeah.
And the tackling, it was a singular play, but the tackling on that play was awful. You could tell, to me, it seemed like everybody was so amped up that they just ran themselves out of position.
Yeah. But it's like, yeah, man, I see a lot of waiting instead of attacking when it comes to the tackling aspect. But those things will get better. But I was at the point last night, you know, very disappointed. But also understand what they had accomplished. And 14 games won this year. And I can say this. If you can't see that this team is on a track to being a better football team, then something is wrong with you. If you think this is a fluke, you're a damn fool. Because you don't fluke 14 wins. You don't fluke a whole season. And on top of it, when you lose a game at the end of the year – to a team who's been probably one of the best teams the whole year.
A Super Bowl favorite all year.
A team, who's loaded. That's not fluky.
Yeah, I don't. I totally agree.
I think you got to a point where mistakes that you were able to overcome against other teams, you're not going to overcome it against this. Just like last night with Buffalo and Kansas City.
Yeah.
Buffalo could probably make those mistakes and the guy that dropped the ball at the end.
Andrews.
No, not Andrews.
Oh, Kincaid.
Kincaid. You can get away with that and probably still beat another team. You're not beating Kansas City like that.
Right.
You know, as I was driving in this morning, I'm listening to Sirius. Andy Reid is a damn magician.
Sure.
Our guy, who used to be here, Samaje Perine, hadn't touched the ball all damn day. All of a sudden, in a crucial moment, Samaje goes out for a pass. Nobody's around him. Because Andy knew.
And he had done the same thing going the other way with the other, maybe Pacheco.
Yeah, but he knew.
Four plays later.
When I line up Samaje, they are going to be thinking he's blocking. And they ran straight up here. Pat hits him, and he doesn't go out of bounds. That little thing right there, the fact that he stayed in bounds is the biggest aspect of that whole play. I mean, we watch guys winning inside of 2 minutes running out of bounds. For what? If they now have a timeout or no timeouts, you control the game at that point. Don't run out of bounds and help them out.
I think yesterday, I don't – people are going to say how awful this Super Bowl matchup is. I don't understand Commanders fans that have any any problem. Like, I don't get how there's any difficulty in who you choose to root for in this thing. Like, you got to really hate Taylor Swift or something if you're considering rooting for Philly. This is KC all the way for me. Uh-huh. I mean, I don't get mad at their greatness. If they have a three-peat, I think that'd be incredible. But yesterday, it's just a tough pill to swallow because early on in this thing, it seemed like Washington opens the game with a 7-minute, 18-play drive. They had two fourth-down conversions on that thing. Jaden converted a fourth down with his shoe off. His shoe fell off, and he still got the first down. You know, I am not – like, the season is over.
Yeah.
The act of second-guessing fourth downs, I loved their – philosophical attitude throughout the year. They were consistent with it. Were you a little surprised on that opening drive when they had already gone for two fourth downs that they then kicked? Because, I mean,
in that situation,
they kicked from the 16-yard line. It was fourth and three. It was four plays earlier. They went for it on fourth and two,
yeah,
and then they had gone for it on fourth and five.
I mean, you get to a point where you can't go to the well constantly.
Yeah.
And like we said before, when they do it and they're successful with it, we always talk about the fact that they hired the guy from the NFL,
yeah,
and he's there to help them out.
Yep.
Well, if he told them don't go for it, then I'm going to go with whatever his analytics are.
Sure.
Because he's been as good throughout the year as he possibly can be, and I'm not knocking it at this point. I know people start to get to the point where, oh, man, hey, man, if they go for it sometimes, they don't go for it sometimes, and I'm gonna deal with that.
Yeah, for the people that want to be dismissive because they got their ass kicked by Philly, they had two clean games in their first two playoff games, and I just think they proved that they absolutely belong on that stage. To go to Detroit and beat down Detroit, you know, as poor as they played yesterday, they dropped 45 on Detroit in their building, and that place was electric, and the Lions couldn't keep up. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, I thought, you know, if Jaden gets going, I don't know that Philly can keep up. Philly proved they can more than keep up. Hurts was really, really good yesterday. There was a lot of question about his health going into that thing. He was fine. And I think where this was my concern going in, I said this throughout last week, I thought Philly was better on both lines of scrimmage. And I think they have built that up over time. I think you lose a guy like Fletcher Cox. Washington yesterday did a good job on Jalen Carter. Mm-hmm. They doubled the hell out of him.
Yeah.
So who stepped up? The other big guy, Jordan Davis, really, really tough. I think Philly's not even in a rebuild situation because they've been good for a while now. I mean, they won a Super Bowl.
They have the,
what was that, 17, 18?
You know what they have, Jay? They have exactly what you need to go on these type of runs. They have a dominant offensive line and a dominant defensive line.
Sure.
And I know we like to put the spotlight on the skill positions.
Yep.
If you don't have the other people, as I call the engine and the transmission, it's not going to get where you want to go. And for those people who are always kind of pessimistic and they keep saying something till it finally becomes true, they lost the game at the end. But you can't tell me, if you truly look at this thing with a non-biased eye, that this team is not good, are going to be better and improve, because they're going to add pieces.
Sure.
And they should step up. But if you keep saying something, like they say, a broken clock is right twice a day. But if you sit there and go, oh, man, they're not this, they're not that, and then finally they lose the game, you were right for that moment. But you were wrong the rest of the time. So if I go with percentages, those people who are trying to run around with their chest poked out today, your teams were at home earlier. Shut the hell up.
I think for me what Philly has, what is most important is they have a talent evaluator. What Howie is able to do, he acts aggressively, not scared to kind of buck conventional wisdom. Like signing Saquon, it's like, oh man, what are you doing? He might be washed. No, he's not. He's fine.
He was washed because he didn't have offensive line in front of him in New York.
They draft really well. They typically build their own guys up, keep their own guys under contract. I think Washington has that in Adam Peters, right? And then I think Washington has a legitimate star franchise quarterback in Jaden Daniels. And if you have those things, the rest of the things tend to kind of work their way out. I think specifically to this season, if you look at the success they had, man, they stacked wins together over and over and over. I am not willing to be dismissive of the late game success because I know they practice it. They practice it going back to August. I mean, that was real practice time devoted to end of game situations. I think where they found an edge, and not that I think this stems from Josh Harris, but I think Harris talked about this, is pro sports are so competitive, and specifically in the NFL, because you have the salary cap, you got to find the margins. You got to find the small areas that you could be better than the opposition. And I think that's a huge part of why they practice end of game, end of half. You know how damn good this team has been end of half situations all year? Aggressive, trying to add points on.
Yeah.
I think you saw that again yesterday. I think yesterday they just ran into a buzzsaw, and there was some unfortunate stuff that happened along the way. You always say turnovers are bad, but when turnovers happen almost matters more.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the first one, the Diami turnover, was tough. Bond made a hell of a play. Honestly, all three of the turnovers, Jaden had the late pick.
Yeah,
I mean, you're desperate in that situation. It's almost like a Hail Mary situation. Quinyon makes a hell of a play. Credit to him.
Yep.
But the game was over at that point.
Very much.
The first fumble, Diami's trying to get extra yards. Eagles make a hell of a play. And what do? They turn that thing around. They score. There was some, I don't know, hope, thought. It felt a little similar in that Washington gets up 3-0. Saquon just goes, right?
Yeah.
60. One play for 60, which to everybody that called in last week and told us, hey, they were really good against Saquon except for the explosives, stop with that. The explosives are part of his, yeah. part of what he does.
Yeah, the explosives are what makes the game get broken open.
Right, dude. Like, I think, so then you're at 7-3 and Washington fumbles. And Philly, if you remember, the next drive wasn't at, certainly, it wasn't like the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I'm like, all right, last week, Washington was down 7-3, and the Lions were driving. And the Lions got maybe not into the red zone, but I think they did, actually. I think when Dorrance Armstrong got that strip sack of Jared Goff, I think they were inside the red zone. I want to say it was like the 13-ish yard line. Mm-hmm. And that strip sack fumble recovery for Washington completely turned things around. Looked like it was about to be 14-3 Detroit, and that building was buzzing, and they were running the ball like hell. Mm-hmm. Washington's defense was able to generate a turnover and stem that, right, and slow that down, but they couldn't do it yesterday.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden it's 14-3. Washington in the first half of this game, B, had two plays, double-digit play drives.
Mm-hmm.
They had an 18-play drive and a 10-play drive. I mean, they ate up more than 11 minutes of time of possession with that.
Mm-hmm.
But when it ends in 3 instead of 7, you're not going to keep up.
No, you're not.
Especially against the way Philly was playing yesterday.
And
I feel like even in that moment, and that was before all the turnovers and all the penalties, you could feel 3's not going to get it done today.
That's also where that time of possession thing sometimes don't work.
Right.
Where if you hold on to the ball 10 minutes and then you get 3 points, and then they have it for 22 seconds and they get 7 points, and then later on you hold it for 8 minutes and you get 3 points, and they have it for 2 minutes and they get 7 points. Your time of possession, I think that we put too much emphasis on time of possession. You got to start looking at, because time of possession and yardage, this is what I say about yardage. If I get a turnover on your 15 or your 20 and I score, you have more yards than me if you go all the way down the field and get 3 and I get 7. But there are teams that they only get the yards that they need to get. And they got the ball in Washington's field of play a lot. And when you do that, basically you're giving points up. When people get the ball in the 20, the 30, the things like that inside your territory, they're leaving with points.
At one point, I tweeted this out in the first half, B. Time of possession can't be your savior when the other team's running back is averaging 32 yards per carry and has 2 touchdowns on 2 carries.
Yeah.
I mean, Saquon was so good so early. But, dude, you play two clean sheets in Tampa and then in Detroit. You're +6 coming into that game. And then you go -4 in the turnover battle.
That shows you there.
It's going
to always be you going to be on that side. And you've already had situations where early in the season you had turnovers and you won games. That doesn't happen all the time. So protecting the football, a lot of people say whatever they want. I think protecting the football is the most important thing of sports.
I mean, this series where Philly scores 12 plays, 61-yard drive, that's when I believe they tush-pushed in for the touchdown. They had the ball at the 1. I think that's right. Did Hurts get 1 on the ground?
What, touchdown?
Yeah, he had 3
yeah.
on the ground.
Yeah, 3.
So that's when – all right. So there's 1:44 left in the second quarter, and they score. And then they kick off, and he fumbles on the kickoff, and then they score again.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, the scoring – like that – the drought there just got so dramatic. It went from 20-12 to 27-12, and then they're able to get the field goal before halftime, but all of a sudden it's a 2-score game, mm-hmm. and it just is getting away from you, man. The penalties were bad. Each fumble that happened came at a worse time than the one before it.
Yeah.
The Eckler fumble, I mean, they were clawing their way back into it, and you could feel every Philly fan in that stadium getting butt tight.
Yeah.
Because they feared Jaden every yeah. time he was on the field.
Yeah.
They're like, yo, this kid can make something happen every time he's on the field. And that Eckler fumble was just brutal. Brutal. I know we'll get into if there's some debate about who got that ball. The bottom of pileups are the bottom of pileups, man.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
B. Mitch, Stallion just told me he's swamped for the next couple weeks. What do you think he's doing?
Nothing. Drinking mimosas with a bunch of dudes.
Just drinking mimosas with dudes. What Stallion's up to.
What's he doing?
What do you can tell us, Stallion, from Grant and Danny, Ryan Clary. What do you got, the Locked On podcast, Locked On Nats?
I mean, there's a lot going on in my life, I will say. I'm actually moving a friend next week.
That's your fault.
I have to do that on Saturday and Sunday, and he's paying me, I will say.
So if he's paying,
some friend you are.
I know, I mean, yeah.
If you were really a friend, you wouldn't charge him.
I should have. I really should have, honestly. But I mean, I'll take the money. It's like I think he's paying me like $150 and probably in some beers as well. I mean, it's not like an easy move. Like this is like
a... This is what you're swamped with, is having to move a buddy next weekend?
Next week, I am moving a buddy. That's next weekend. And then 2 weekends from now, it's obviously the Super Bowl. I'm down to go out that Saturday because you guys said you're like, hey, pick a spot. We'll take you out drinking with Max. I'll do Saturday before the Super Bowl or Friday, wherever. I don't care.
Well, I'm just tell you, I never said I was gonna be hanging out with
you. Big check, and I'll be there. I promise.
I mean, this just sounds so fishy. Like I'm not gonna lie.
Well, you don't see him looking at you, smiling in your damn face.
Exactly. Because
you know I'm not showing up, which because you order mimosas.
I'm not gonna order. I mean, I'll order mimosas if we want to order mimosas.
No, that's why I'm not coming because
Brian
I know
has
you do.
Irrational hatred for mimosas.
I got irrational hatred for men that sit together with men ordering mimosas.
I remember it was like one of the first things when I worked in the show. I was like, "Oh yeah, like we went out for mimosas," and Brian was like, "You got a mimosa?"
No, you didn't.
you sent the video
of you and your boys sitting at a park bench. Drinking mimosas.
I mean, it was a good time.
Hate me too,
man. It
was
a great time, in fact.
Huh?
You said, hate me too. It ain't nothing wrong with no mimosas, Ryan. You good, bro.
No. You did not hear. It's a whole stipulation.
All the
you probably with a chick.
All the boys say, hey,
it was him and four dudes. No, I'm not doing that.
I don't know, man. Mimosas are good, and Bloody Marys are pretty good.
Mimosas are good with your lady, not with your four dudes.
Well, yes, but Brian, it's bottomless mimosas. You're paying like $10 to have unlimited champagne. That's the point of it.
The champagne is probably worth $1.
I don't care. I used to drink Andre. Remember, I used to drink Andre from 7-Eleven. It was like $6
a pop. You probably still do.
Where were we? I think it was the Detroit at the Lions game. Andre was like the official champagne of the Detroit Lions. Like they had signs up in the stadium. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
No, it was real.
Andre's legit, man. I think you guys sleep on Andre champagne. That is my thing. I go to 7-Eleven. It's all dusty. No one buys it.
Have fun.
Guess what I do?
Have fun.
I will.
I will let you do that. Make sure when you go get that drink, order something more expensive than Andre. If JP and I pay for it, you got to order something more expensive.
If you guys are paying, no problem.
Yeah. We'll be there to pay it at the end of the tab.
We'll be there by like 9:30, 10.
If you don't see us, just pay for it. We'll pay you back.
This sounds sketchy, but all right.
Here it is, and this should not be a surprise. We talked about this earlier in the program. David Blau has requests from the Jets and Jaguars to interview for their quarterback coaching jobs, as well as a request from the Bears for the passing game coordinator.
We expected it.
Yep.
One thing I'm not going to get up in arms about, someone getting a better opportunity. Like, everyone gets into this thing to eventually try to get a head coaching job if they can move to it. And if you think if someone's going to – look, there's not going to be a lifetime assistant anymore. It doesn't happen like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm cool with it. And when you look at the way this team is constructed on the coaching staff, they probably have somebody they already feel can step right in. Keep moving.
Mm-hmm. So this morning I wrote an article for the NBC Washington website talking about all the next steps that are coming, and the top one is the coaching stuff. You didn't lose Cliff, but you're going to lose other assistants. It's inevitable. I asked DQ about it earlier in the week. He said, yeah, we're prepared. We built a big staff. We'll take it as it comes. And there's really not much else Washington can do, right?
Uh-huh.
You can't, to your point, B, one, you're not allowed to If a coach gets an opportunity at a promotion with another team,
can't stop it.
You're not allowed to block it. And two, I would add, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
It's one thing if you know a guy's taking a bad job or you know a guy's walking into something that will end up getting him fired or something. Like, if you want to impart some knowledge along the way, cool.
That's cool.
But as humans, we should never try to stunt someone else's growth.
I'm with that.
It's one of the things I really hate when I see.
I get you one thing. I look at this. Well, every time we've heard anyone discuss the great relationship with Jaden Daniels all year, who did they say?
Honestly, a bunch of people.
For the most part, it's been Cliff. And I understand that there people are head quarterback coaches, assistant coaches. Ultimately, it comes down to when Jaden and Cliff sit there and come up with a plan of what he likes the most, that relationship is probably vitally and more important than anything out there. Cliff is still here.
Agreed. I'm not saying this ruins anything. Over the course of the year, Jaden has talked about Blau. He's talked about Tavita Pritchard, who's still here, Brian Johnson. He talked about Sam Hartman, Jeff Driscoll, Marcus Mariota, like all these people. You know what's interesting? When we talk about the free agent that needs to be back, I believe Mariota was a one-year deal too.
Yeah.
And, dude, when he played, he was
good.
Really good.
He was good.
Yeah, he's an unrestricted free agent. So, obviously, this Blau thing, I think that's going to move and move fast. We'll see what happens. So the four things I wrote about were coaches, got to be ready. You got a bunch of your own in-house free agents. You get a little runway on that, yeah. Right? Like, only you can talk to them until the middle of March if you want to talk to them.
I don't think you need to bring in 35 more new people this year.
No, right.
You know, it could go down a little bit.
Right. You and I think, are pretty much agreement as far as you got to spend in free agency, but you don't necessarily have to spend the absolute top, particularly at wide receiver.
You don't have to spend every dollar.
And then I think they really got to work on the trenches, particularly edge rush, run defense on the edge. But that doesn't mean, again, like, identify the right guys for your system and try to maybe get multiple guys rather than sign, like, there's talk of Trey Hendrickson becoming available or something, right? Yeah. Like, he's a heck of a player. Maybe he helps you, but maybe he doesn't.
Let's just say this. Whoever you get, make sure they hit. Because that's been a problem with around here sometimes.
You're right.
They get people and they don't hit. But last year they got people, they hit. So if you can keep doing that, that makes a world of difference.
And I have one bonus. There's one other thing. This is an off the field, but I think an easy fix. And I'm going to lean on my man Jeff a little bit here as the resident musician for the program. I want to be super crystal clear. This is not about the name. This is not about the logo. This is not about anything. I'm not talking rebranding. Oh, I'm not talking anything, right? Like, you know what my daughter told me before I left for Philly? She's like, yeah, Daddy, I used to really miss the old name, but now I just want them to win. And I think that's great.
Mm-hmm.
If they change the name, keep the name, bring in 8 more names, I don't care. This is not about any of that. But what is undeniable, and some of it is simple, the old name was 2 syllables, Redskins. The new name is 3 syllables, Commanders. And in turn, they messed the fight song up. Like, here's what I want. You don't need to pump the lyrics in the stadium. People are going to sing what they're going to sing anyway. There are adults in there. But play the music of the old song so that it doesn't sound messed up when they get to the chorus. Jeff, you're the musician here. By adding the syllable, doesn't it inherently change the melody?
No, it doesn't, because you can have multiple flows on a beat. The beat is the beat, you know? But it do, when you have people singing a song that use hair to da da da.
Right.
Now they're going hair da 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 da. It's like,
let's say hey to the Manders.
It's like they just rushing it.
Say Manders. I watch people call them Manders all year.
I don't care what you say.
Yeah, they
just play the original
beat.
Song.
Yeah, for sure.
Because that beat is so much, like the weird, slower, jazzy chorus part. Just go back. Yo, don't play the words. Just play the music and let the people sing what they want. But this team now is scoring a lot. Like, it's dope. People are singing that damn song. Play the good one that flows. Not the, like, the rebrand has had highs and lows, and now I think most people that aren't in this for, like, BS political reasons are past the name stuff, right? Whether it comes or goes, I don't know, and frankly, I just don't have attention. I don't have, like, a bandwidth for it. But, like, when I hear the song, and then I hear, like, you know, have you ever been at a birthday party? This is more for little kids. But, like, if you're at a birthday party and it is, like, for my daughter, for Ainsley's birthday, we did a birthday with her and her friend Rosie, right? Mm-hmm. And so everybody's singing, everybody knows the song, happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday. And then, like, half the crowd doesn't know which name to say first. And so you get this, like, happy birthday, dear Ainsley, Rosie, because nobody knows exactly what to sing. Like, that's what's happening with this song. So just bring back the original beat. And then if people say Redskins or Manders is a good idea, or Commanders, you jam it all in there, at least it's all on time.
I love you to death, bro, but y'all putting too much thought into this crap right now.
I think this was so easy.
This is too much of a stretch. I mean, I don't give a damn what they say, what they play. They scored a touchdown is where my concern is. And normally where we sit, we don't hear the damn song anyway.
We hear it in the press box. It's right there.
It's
you're
outside.
In a suite, dog.
It's outside, though. In the suite, we have the windows open. In the press box, they have no windows open, so you don't hear much of nothing.
I just think it's an easy fix. And
it's a fix that we shouldn't even be concerned about right now. That's how we get into these conversations sometimes in the offseason, that we go, oh, and then later on we talk about stuff. Man, we waste all that time. That's a waste of time.
Then what's your biggest position of need for the Commanders in 2025?
Defensive and offensive linemen.
What O-lineman do you want to replace?
It ain't the fact to replace it. It's making it better, okay? It ain't the replacing aspect. You got guys on the team that can still be on the team, but do you believe that their offensive line was blocking that he's supposed to block against the Eagles?
No. I think okay? The Eagles are also
so
really
it's not
good.
About replacing, dude. It's about improving. And let's be real. Every year, on teams that they win Super Bowls, sometimes that starting lineman is not there the next year. Somebody else comes in.
But so here's what I'm saying. It's easy to say. I think defensively, it's pretty obvious, especially if you look at the contract structure with Allen and Payne, frankly, that there could be changes there. They drafted Newton.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd almost wonder – I'll pull the roster up. Like, I wonder if there's a D-end edge rusher under contract next year. I guess Javonte Jean-Baptiste, right?
How much did Doris? Doris didn't sign a one-year deal.
Doris got a three-year, but there's guaranteed money into the second year. That's one for sure. People listed as DN. Farrell's on a one-year. Doris is on there. So how do they have the rest of these guys listed as linebackers? Fowler's a one-year. Luvu is not a traditional edge rusher, but he gives you good rush off the edge. Like, that's going to be a really interesting position. Because just from a numbers standpoint, you're going to have to replenish it. I think it's probably, as far as true edge rushers, it's Dorrance and JJB. Maybe there's somebody on IR that I'm not thinking about.
Because Fowler and what's called
Fowler
one year deal.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, F.A. was on the practice squad all year. He played for them previously, F.A. Obata.
Yep.
I don't know what his – I would imagine – if he's not a free agent, there's certainly not guaranteed money there. I think if you look at the defensive poor performance in the run game throughout the season, you're probably looking to make some significant overhauls on the D-line. I thought John Allen played really well in the playoff run. And part of me does think he legitimately wants to stay here. But from a straight-up contract standpoint, you're looking at a $22 million cap hit where you could save $16 mil. Like, at some point, the numbers start to dictate things.
Mm-hmm.
He missed, you know, most of the season. Payne might still have guarantees on there. Yeah, Payne still
has. He does.
He has $9 million guaranteed. The money would be completely upside down on Payne. Now, he has a $26 million cap hit, but, like, I don't think they're going to, but if you were talking about a move there, it'd be a $26 million dead money hit to save $300,000, which just isn't going to happen. And, dude, I think Payne and Allen catch too much heat, and people want to, like, look at these graphs and statistics I'm not saying either of those guys had their best year. Allen was hurt. I don't know that Payne did, and then Payne missed the Eagles game.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people throw way too much shade at those two.
People throw shade at the people with the highest draft position because, let's be real, they were promoted by their draft position for the longest, right?
Yeah.
And people didn't see that play. And the same thing is that they praise you about is what they're going to knock you about. If the guy was a fifth-round pick and came in and played great, they'll be like, oh, man, he was a fifth-round pick, like great player. But if he doesn't play well, what do they say? Oh, he was just a fifth-round pick. So when you're a first-rounder, you're going to get the love automatically because you are a first-rounder. And then when people don't feel that you're living up to what that position was,
right,
you'll get knocked because of that. You know, that's reality. So it's not like they're getting too much. That's the position you were picked in, and that's the expectation. Like you said, they went to the NFC Championship game this year. Next year, nobody's going to judge you off of winning 4 games. They're going to judge you off of winning 12 games. It's going the expectation changes.
Well, and next year.
And that's just real. That's not poking or throwing shade. That is reality.
Sure. I think because of where they draft and it's pretty far back, you're probably taking, I don't want to say a project because there's good players all over the draft, but like if you're drafting in the bottom five of the NFL draft, you might not get like a finished product that could come in right away for you and play.
But what if?
So you're going to have to sign somebody.
What if a guy is drafted that's a fourth round, a fifth round, a sixth rounder, and he comes and hits the ground running,
sure,
like a lot of people have done in this league. See, I could care less about the draft position,
yeah,
the round. We've saw teams, we've seen our competition draft people in rounds after the first, and we can't block them, or we can't get past them. What Adam Peters has that capability. So dude, when you draft somebody, make sure they work. That's all that matters.
Yo, I'm scrolling through like just picks and everything now. So they have three top 100 picks, 29, 61, 79, then a big old drop. They don't pick again until almost 150.
Mm-hmm.
So they go 129, 229, 315. After the third round, 15th overall pick, they don't draft again until the fifth round, ninth pick.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big old hole. Now, there moves, people are always kind of moving around, so you never know. I mean, I'm just scrolling through. Obviously, last year's draft, they got a ton of production from their rookies. Jaden, Johnny Newton, Sam are still at the top. Brandon Coleman started, 13 games?
Mm-hmm.
Luke McCaffrey at least contributed a ton. They didn't necessarily have a lot of offensive statistics, but he was on the field a lot.
Yep.
You know, the 2023 draft, can you name the draft picks?
2023 was my man, 13, what was his name?
Forbes.
Forbes was number one.
The only person you got play, Quan Martin was the second round pick. Quan's been good.
And look at Quan's production this year compared to what he was under another coaching staff.
Just listen to this draft, though. They only had 7 picks. Forbes, Quan, Ricky Stromberg, Braden Daniels, KJ Henry, Chris Rodriguez Jr., Andre Jones Jr.
Chris and Andre are still here, which tells me they like something about those two.
Yeah, I mean, both were on the practice squad,
yeah,
elevated up and down. I don't know that Andre played. Did he
I don't think Dre played this year? I think he was dressed out one game.
Okay.
But I don't know if he played, but like.
Chris did.
What I know
the
about
Braden
this
Daniels
here,
pick when they made that was so awful, yeah, that they immediately had to invent an injury and put him on IR.
At least I know this.
KJ Henry might be on a practice squad somewhere.
This coaching staff keep people around who they think could possibly help them.
And the flip side?
The other people
they
kept
cut
people
guys that, won't.
That they drafted. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, I just, look, man, I watch Coach Gibbs, I watch Andy draft people in later rounds than the first round. And the guys were big pieces and parts of the team. I also watch a lot of people come in here and pick the first rounders. And we all automatically gave them all the love in the world. And there were people that were drafted after them that was kind of playing a little better. But they never got that love. Whoever they draft, whatever round it is, I hope to hell that person could play.
I know for sure. I don't disagree with that. It's just remarkable when you talk about the lack of depth or, you know, need to rebuild the O and D lines. Like, the drafts under Ron were just so awful for a series of years. It's just hard. It's kind of like hard to fathom. Dude, I mean, look at the 22 draft. The first two rounders, one was traded before the season, one was cut in season, Jahan and Fedarian. B-Rob contributed. Percy's a contributor. Yep. Sam Howell's in Seattle. Cole Turner's on the practice squad. Chris Paul, I don't think, started a game. I mean, he was kind of your ninth offensive lineman. Sip Holmes wasn't on the roster. Go back a year prior, Jamin was released in season. Cosby got a contract extension. St. Juice was on the roster. Diami had a good year, finally. Bates had a good year. Forrest kind of backtracked. Cam Cheeseman was a drafted long snapper. William Bradley King. Shaka Toney was suspended from the league for gambling.
Wait. That name again, Cheeseman?
Yeah.
We drafted that dude. What round were we drafted him in?
Fifth. Maybe sixth. They traded up to get him.
Yeah, I remember that. See?
Nice fella.
That's the kind of things I'm not even worried and concerned about anymore. Bad picks like that.
Antonio Gandy-Golden was a fourth-round pick.
Who?
Nobody go anywhere. We're going to talk a little Terps hoops in advance of tonight. What up, everybody? It is 10 a.m. in the District of Columbia. Points north, south, east, and west. You're listening to B. Mitch and Finley. We're all in studio on a Wednesday, and football season's officially over. Normally, we'd be in Ashburn. There's one game left. It's the Super Bowl. Some people hate it. I mean, it's the Super Bowl. I'm excited about
it. I'm going to watch it.
Good morning, Brian. How you doing?
Brother? I'm chilling, man.
Caps had a big win.
Yep.
Did you stay up and watch it?
Nope.
Okay.
Well, I was on the treadmill, so.
That's what I was wondering, if you had it on.
Nah.
So you did the treadmill from like 8 to 9 last night?
I went home. I sat on that little area I told you on my couch. I fell asleep.
Black hole of awakeness.
Then I had to send some stuff to my son. I went and sent that. Came back, ate some food. Waited about 45 minutes, jumped on the treadmill. Got off the treadmill. And when I touched the bed, I was out.
I dropped the girls this morning, came in here early. I had a very interesting conversation with Matt Valdez while he was preparing some sort of avocado dish.
Mm-hmm.
And went downstairs, got on the treadmill. And I hadn't ran. I mean, honestly, I bet I've run twice in the last month. Just the end of the football season. And then they get on this crazy playoff run. And it's the holidays. Like, I was just out of shape, certainly. And thank you, Jeff. And B, I got like a mile and a half in.
Uh-huh.
My legs were heavy as hell, dude. And it was like Greg called me, and I could answer it like on my AirPods.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, can I call you back? I'm dying.
Greg would call you when you're doing something, working out or something. Well, you know he's not going to work out.
I think he was just driving, so it made sense. Caps, dude, are killing it. Took one in Calgary last night.
Yep.
As a radio program, none of us have ever heard a single nice thing about Calgary, right?
I haven't.
Now, none of us have heard.
I haven't heard anything bad about them either, but I've never heard nothing good.
Listen, we've never heard anything about Calgary, but we've certainly never heard a nice thing about Calgary. So to hell with Calgary. The Caps are in first place in the Metro by a lot. They have 73 points. The Carolina Hurricanes are right behind them with 66.
Mm.
And the Hurricanes have played one more game. In the whole Eastern Conference, they're in first place by a lot. And I think they are tied with the Winnipeg Jets, right? Mm. Winnipeg Jets for most points in all of hockey.
Mm.
You know what would be dope is if the Caps go on one of these wild runs, like as cool as it was when they won the last joint in Vegas,
mm-hmm.
like I'm going to be honest with you, B. Going to a city like Winnipeg or Edmonton or Calgary, not really on my list of things to do. So it'd be cool if like a work trip.
But if they go on a great
Edmonton.
If they go on a great run and start, and he is in one of those cities when he breaks the record, that would be fun.
That'd be cool too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I want,
you know, that whole country has gone from disliking him just because he wasn't Canadian to respecting the hell out of him now.
Well, who was that one ass bag clown that used to always try to S-talk Ovi that was Canadian?
One of those guys on one of the top shows.
Yeah, he was
a former coach. I
Milbury, maybe?
Sound like that.
He was a jerk. And yeah. I feel like there was – I understand the Canadians don't like the Europeans. I don't really know what that's all about. But Ovechkin – remember Scott McLuhan? He would only describe the kind of guys he wanted on the team as football players. You remember that? Ovi is a hockey player.
Hell like, yeah.
His game transcends Europe, that's North America – Canada, Mexico.
When you are the originator of a certain sport, and then someone from somewhere else comes and plays better than people from your country, you feel some kind of way. You know, that's all that is
for sure.
But you got to learn to get over it and just respect. Don't hate the game. Hate the player. Hate the game. The player, he learned the game and he did what he was supposed to do, and he's still doing it.
Absolute dog is what he is. B. Mitch, some news yesterday that, frankly, you and I kind of expected, I would say.
Yep.
Kingsbury is not interested in the New Orleans job. Cliff Kingsbury sticking around as play caller. I texted somebody yesterday, and the reply was just, you're going to see a lot more of him. So he's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Now, for the Commanders on this thing, like, he's under contract. He's just remaining. Like, there's no news for – there's no announcement for them.
They don't have to make an announcement.
Right. Like, so if people are like, oh, why hasn't Washington said anything? Why would they?
They don't have to. He's their coach. I mean, and they have him under contract, and he was the one that had to make that choice. He was like, okay, I got interest. I don't want that job right there.
Right.
You know, and like you stated before, he's been a coach before. He's being paid still from Arizona. He can make those choices like that. If it was somebody getting their first job, I'd see they'll jump at it. But, nah, he doesn't have to.
I agree with you there. I think it's been...
You know what makes an offensive coordinator look real good?
Can I guess?
A phenom quarterback.
Yeah, it sure does.
So, why would you run away from
Adam Gase got two jobs because he worked with Peyton Manning.
Yeah, and,
two.
And they think he has something to do with Peyton.
Right.
Peyton has something to do with Peyton. Now, Peyton was already a star when Adam Gase got him.
Totally. That's just my running joke of, like, what people will search for to find success. I do think, though, I'm a big believer that Peyton Manning, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Joe Montana, John Elway, like, those dudes were good because they were good. Mm-hmm. And then there are certainly coaches along the way that make you better.
Yeah.
Those dudes were good because they were good.
Yeah.
I think Jaden was really good this year because he was good, because he is good.
Yeah.
But I do think Cliff helped also.
Yeah.
I think Cliff
grew into
a really good relationship.
A smart coach exactly sees what you're capable of, and they enhance. They don't try to mess up. We've seen coaches try to take a guy who's already there and change him up and screw up everything. Cliff was like, okay, we know, we see what you're about. I watch your work. Let's figure this thing out. You know? He was smart in that essence. Sometimes the best coach is the one that doesn't change anything about your game. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Have you ever gone to a golf coach and you're swinging and they're trying to make you swing like them? He's 6 feet, 155 pounds.
Right.
You would never do things he can do, but they want you to become them instead of taking what you do well and enhancing that. The smart coach is just enhanced with what a guy already has.
Well, and I think the best coaches, Cliff said it over and over and over again. I think especially on the offensive side of the ball for play callers, there gets to be such a, I'm trying to think of a different word, a measuring contest. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Among offensive coaches about who could be the best play caller, who could be the most innovative, whose stuff will the nerds like the most. You know what I mean? And I think that's the worst mindset for play callers.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best mindset for play callers is, what do I have? How do I play to their strengths? And Cliff said over and over and over again, players, not plays.
Yeah.
And I think they put Jaden in so many positions to succeed. And I think as the season progressed, Jaden got so much more on his plate that he was able to just handle perfectly and keep growing.
Think about this. When Joe Gibbs was calling plays and doing things, everybody and their mama knew they were running the counter right, counter left.
OK. counter Trey.
Power. They knew they were running it. And he kept running. He didn't all of a sudden say, well, I got to start doing this because everybody else is doing it. The best play call is the one that calls a damn play that works. I don't care how much motion you do and whatever, wherever you line somebody up. If it doesn't work, guess what? It's not a good play. If the plays work consistently and it's the most bland stuff in the world, it works. Right now, Kellen Moore, Saquon right, Saquon left. Nothing fancy about it. You know?
Dude,
he's a damn good play caller. You know why? Because that dude right there, you give him an inch, he's going to take a mile.
I think the Commanders got to a place, especially on the fourth downs.
Mm-hmm.
If it was fourth and less than three, you better expect that quarterback counter to the right side because
They
ran it a ton.
And nobody didn't stop it.
Right. And Jaden's ability with his legs was his own version of a cheat code. But, like, if I notice it, you're damn sure the guys that grind film for 14 hours a day notice it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes it's just what works.
Sometimes you can't do anything about it. At that point, when they know what you're running, it comes down to who's going to win, who's going to not let somebody beat them. That's basically the thing. That's what he mean by players. Sometimes it's one-on-one battles. You're going to either kick ass or get ass kicked.
I think... Remember when the cliff was a thing?
Mm-hmm.
Remember when everybody was worried that Kingsbury was going to fall apart in the second half of the season?
Yeah.
That didn't happen. I think there was some really unfair statistics.
If your starting quarterback gets hurt in the second half of the season, hell, he's supposed to fall off.
Right.
Let's be real.
I totally agree with that. I think Kingsbury wanting to stay is awesome for the continued development of Jaden Daniels. Mm-hmm. Not that, like, he needs more work, but it's just two guys getting to know each other.
Chemistry, consistency.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, that works.
There's zero doubts about Jaden's work ethic.
Yeah.
From college to now, the virtual reality, how early he gets in there. But there is something. I feel like there's a little something, B. Adam Peters in the presser the other day said, he's like, man, we love Cliff. We thought he had a great year. He's a great leader. He's a great play caller. And Peters joked, and he's like, damn, I try to beat him in here, and I still never do.
Yeah.
The guy is in here at 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
There's a little something in that to me where, like, I feel like I know Jaden a little bit. That's a hyper-competitive dude.
He's
going to be like, I'm going to beat this MF into the office one of these days. You know, like, I think there's a little healthy.
But that right there is that healthy competition.
Right.
Where – you and your coach.
Pushing each other forward.
Because, like, Chris Bosh, okay? Chris Bosh, when he was trying to beat Kobe in, he wasn't trying to beat Kobe to say, oh, yeah, I'm better than you. He was trying to beat Kobe because he's like, damn, how early does this dude get up? And he runs in there, like, 2 hours earlier than he would normally do, and Kobe is on his way out from already having an hour and a half workout to go get some breakfast and come back. If you keep trying to beat the guy who's the standard, what is it going to do for you in the process? Make you better, right? So Cliff and Jaden with that little friendly competition right there, and then Adam coming in with it, all that stuff makes your team better. You know, because, like, sometimes, you know, you ever heard the story where they talk about the guy was saying, you don't have to be smarter than the people. You just got to get there before them. So if the super intelligent person shows up at 10 o'clock and you got there at 6 or 7, you got 3 hours on him. So you may not be smarter than him, but you got more time working in it, and you become just as effective as he is. So if all those guys are trying to win to get in there earlier, you know what's going to happen? It's going to be other people on the team getting in there early too.
Dude.
And then at that point, you're putting more work into the game plan with a lot of people, which builds a lot of great chemistry.
Totally, man. So, I think it's great news. I think they're still going to lose coaches. Like, there's going to be guys further down the roster, whatever it is, down the staff ledger, whatever you would call the coaching side of this. Odds are they're still going to lose somebody. I'd be shocked if a guy, like, I know this much. David Blough is not going to be an assistant quarterback's coach for long.
No.
His reputation... And he installed a bunch of plays this year. And one thing I love, man,
I've experienced this in my life as a media person.
Mm-hmm.
And you know some of the people I'm talking about. There are, and this can happen in any profession, mm-hmm. whether you're an accountant, a DJ, an architect, trying to start your own business, whatever mm-hmm. it is. There are people that will intentionally try to stunt your growth mm-hmm. because they want, either for their own self-preservation or they want to try to take their ideas and instead of you growing, they get credit for stuff.
Yeah.
Those people exist in the world, in all walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I love and appreciate about Kingsbury, he's so confident, and maybe it helps that he's probably sitting on $25 million in the bank or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's just who he is as a person. He's never like that. Every time there was a play that was a David Blau creation, he would say, oh, Blau came up with that.
Yeah.
I love that approach because that when it's truly comprehensive and everybody gets to contribute, but two, like I'm not trying to take credit for somebody else. That was awesome that they did.
That what goes around comes around thing works. And like, let's be real, there's a lot of people in the world who take credit for a person who they never really talked to about the business, but that person goes after hours and work, and then the person that just happened to be the person they report to, they take credit. You don't have a damn thing to do with my success for the most part. You know what I mean?
Totally.
That happens a lot. But, you know, I think Blau's not going to always be sitting where he's at. But you know what? I believe that this, the brain trust and the people in front of this whole thing, if it's like a little competition and it's a little bit more, they may give him more.
I agree with that.
You know, and a lot of times the situation in one place could be way better than the situation with a better title. So I told my boy Kenny one time, like, man, they're going to give me a promotion. I said, what's that promotion? He said, well, man, my title going to change this and this. I said, did you get more money? Said, nah. I said, well, don't take it. He said, why? I said, because the title you have now, you can get fired for what you did yesterday. See, when they change your name, give you a little management title, then they can fire you for the stuff you did as a whatever.
Right.
No. If they don't give you more money, don't take it.
Now, you mean that advice except for the dozens of official correspondents we have here on the B. Mitchell Finley program. Because, like, for a guy like Tress Way, being our official Oklahoma lifestyle reporter, carries great consequence, although no financial reward.
Hey, guess what? He has the same title forever. We have to change the title.
Right.
We are not going to give him a promotion, so he won't ask for no money because we ain't giving him none.
Coming up later, we have the official analytics expert of the B. Mitchell Finley program, Neil Greenberg. Again, the title, very, very lofty, no financial compensation.
We gave Tress that title bump, and he started throwing passes in the NFC Championship game.
See, we helped him out.
The B. Mitchell Finley bump.
That's all I'm saying.
We gave him confidence, Landfill.
Exactly.
Greenberg's coming on at 11. Mike Jones from The Athletic at noon. Jeff Ehrman previewing a big Terps hoops game tonight at 1:30. Pack show coming your way. Do you want to know the real story or just the public-facing version? I wrote an article. My fingers could still type. I'll explain when we return. Who is that? No, dude.
But that looks just like Will Compton.
B, that looks nothing like Will Compton.
Yes, it does.
Is not Will Compton.
Hope it's not.
I promise it's A.Q. Shipley. He was the offensive lineman.
Well, he looked like Will Compton.
B, I'm going to show you a picture of Comp.
In the face, they look the same.
Comp has hair. That dude is bald.
I'm about to say.
All right, let's get to the rude guest hotline. And talk to our friend, Mr. Jeff Ehrman, covers the Terps for 24/7 Sports. Jeff, what's up, dude? How are you?
JP and B. Mitch, I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Good, brother.
Do you happen to be near a television, Jeff, where you can put on Pat McAfee and see the dude that's on TV that beats off Will Compton?
I'm not, but I don't know if I want to get in the middle of it anyways.
I'm not worried about a linebacker.
That's a picture of Comp from his Instagram recently.
I'm not worried about a linebacker.
That dude looked nothing like him.
Yeah,
all right.
Okay.
Jeff, let's... I'm going to be honest. I try to pay a little attention to the Turtles as football's going on, but it's just so all-encompassing. But I'm ready to lock back in. Things are going all right for Maryland basketball right now. Get me up to speed.
Yeah, suddenly they are, JP. You know, they had that little midseason funk that they went through
obviously losing those road games and losing at Washington and not playing very well. And then they just kind of, I don't want to say turned it on overnight, but they've gotten hot now. They've won 5 out of the past 6, you know, favored over Wisconsin tonight. Should be a packed house, you know, one of the kind of that electric environment that we've become accustomed to, but haven't seen as much lately at Xfinity Center. And, you know, they're number 5 in the Big Ten standings. So, you know, they're starting to go in the right direction at the right time of the season.
Well, and they've won the last two, they've won on the road, right? And it wasn't that one of the big knocks on Willard? They never win on the road?
Yeah, that was probably the biggest knock. You know, he was heading into that. I think the number was 4-20 on the road in Big Ten games during his first 2.5 years, including an 0-4 start this year. Went out to Illinois, you know, they were missing their star center, so that helped. But at the same time, you know, that's probably not going to account for a 21-point win over a, you know, a top 20 team. So that's a big one. And then they go to Indiana and control a lot of the game or lead for most of the game. It looks like they're definitely going to give it away late, down 5, and have a last-minute comeback with Rodney Rice's 3 to win it with 7 seconds left. So, you know, all of a sudden they've ditched, they've gotten the road monkey off their back. We'll see if they can continue it. But, you know, they've built some momentum now, and I'm sure Willard is feeling a little less heat now about that.
What's the strength of this team this year? Is it more or less the shooting, defense, what?
Well, you know, their biggest strength is that they have two really good big men, Julian Reese, who's, you know, been one of the most productive centers in the Big Ten for several years, and then Derek Queen, who is obviously a 5-star recruit, one of the best big men in the country. So that's what you notice about them at first glance, but they have shot the ball really well, especially compared to last year. Anybody who watched last year, the season felt 20 years long watching all these bricks go off the backboard all season. They're at like 27%, way toward the bottom of the country. This year they're up to about 36%, so top, you know, 1/3 or so of the Big Ten. So they can shoot it. That's the thing they've got. They don't have a lot of depth, but they can beat you with either style, which is something they showed on the road trip. You know, they hammered Illinois inside for 62 paint points, the most by any Big Ten team all season. And then they go to Indiana and they get beat in the paint, but they make 14 of 28 threes. So as guys in your sport would say, they've got a multiple offense.
I like hearing that because they sure haven't in the past.
Yeah.
We're talking with our friend Jeff Ehrman. You can follow all his work at Jeff_Ehrman. Does an absolutely great job covering Maryland sports. You check all his work out at Inside MD Sports. All right, so Wisconsin tonight. How many Big Ten teams are ranked? I saw the SEC has like 100 teams ranked, and the ACC has 1. Where the Big Ten somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, I believe it's 5 right now. I think Maryland is the only team in the top 6 that isn't ranked. They were 2nd among teams receiving votes this week. So you'd think that, you know, obviously a win today, especially because they don't play again for another week. They've got like a weird midseason break. Should get them ranked. But, you know, the Big Ten, aside from rankings, what we really need to see is the Big Ten make some noise in the tournament, right? Because every year it's kind of the same story there. You know, we'll see if they can finally do it this year. But I think it's 5 teams right now.
I kind of want to ask you what the hell is going on with the ACC that they have nobody ranked, but that's a different question.
That's really unbelievable, and that's the first thing I bring up when people get nostalgic and bitter about Maryland leaving the ACC is, even if they hadn't left the ACC, it's not the ACC it used to be, you know, that we, the three of us, used to watch 20 years ago or whatever it might have been with all these classic teams and superstars. It's really fallen off. But, you know, the name of the game right now, largely in college sports, is money. And those ACC schools aren't getting the same kind of money that the Big Ten and the SEC programs are. And with NIL and everything else, that makes it very hard to compete at a high level. Having 0 teams is definitely unusual.
I hear that, but they have big backings. Why they aren't getting the money like those other leagues?
TV deals, you know, the Big Ten has always been the leader in TV money. You know, every time they get a new TV deal, it's record-setting, whereas ACC schools are getting, you know, maybe half of what they're getting revenue-wise. Now, those schools, that's not an excuse like a Duke or a North Carolina. They have plenty of money. They're standalone marquee national brands. But for the most part in that conference, you know, it's all – and in football, too, it's fallen off a lot for the same reason. It's not the same conference that it used to be.
That's crazy. And, you know, Jeff, you could have just said, JP, when you get nostalgic, don't be, rather than just try to throw that veiled shot at me.
Yeah, that's funny. No, it's not. Trust me. I've heard it from a few people.
You can come direct. So this matchup tonight, this is a big opportunity. I saw – maybe you retweeted it. 15 years ago tonight was the first Gold Rush game where Grievous took down Duke. I was at that game. Me and my boy Steve Simmons, that was an absolute blast. I remember it was icy as hell, and we went to Bentley's after. I mean, I lived in Northeast D.C. at the time, and my boy Simmons lived like just north of Baltimore, and we got a hotel in College Park that night because we both didn't. We wanted to be able to just enjoy the night, and I remember slipping and falling, walking from Bentley's to the Best Western or whatever. How do they get a win tonight? What's Wisconsin's biggest threat?
Well, Wisconsin's got a guard named John Tonji, who's, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, he's really good, 18 points a game, about 5 rebounds a game, shooting 40% from three. But, you know, it'll be the same thing as usual with Wisconsin. They're going to try to grind it out. They're going to play really tough physical defense. That's what Greg Gard is all about. You know, they're not going to be as athletic as a lot of these teams are. You know, it feels to me like one of those games where Maryland just kind of wins these games coming home after a little winning streak with fans starting to get on board. You know, Xfinity Center is such a huge home court advantage, no matter who the coach has been for the past however many years. Maryland's always won at a very high rate at home. So, you know, they have had some tough games with Wisconsin lately, but I think talent-wise and in terms of just where they are in the season right now with their momentum, this is one that they should win.
All right, so they're supposed to win. Lastly, B, you brought up the cash. I don't know who reported this, but I know I've seen it. Within the last week, some anonymous donor gave $10 million specifically to Maryland basketball, right?
Yeah, I heard that was you, JP.
Well, I'm trying to keep it anonymous, Jeff.
Okay, my bad.
All good. B and I split it. But what does...
No, I already gave him enough.
What does a, what is a gift like that, like a 10 mil gift, do for... Like, because in a lot of ways, that's a ton of cash. But in other ways, is it? Like, how long does that fund your collective? I don't know.
Yeah. So it's a little complicated now because of the new revenue sharing that's starting next school year where schools can pay athletes up to $20.5 million in total, like a salary cap for all sports combined, primarily football and basketball. I asked someone at Maryland if it would go toward that. They said no, that 20.5 is already budgeted, but you know, I'm sure it'll fill in some of the other gaps operationally, scholarships, other things like that, that, you know, make it easier to spend that 20.5 million on athletes. And then, you know, a lot of schools, there's a lot of ways out there that you see where they're able to still do NIL deals on top of the 20 million. So you have schools that you hear are going to, they'll spend the $20 million, but then they're going to have another $20 million through side collectives and things like that. So it could play into that. But as of right now, what they're saying is that's you know, going to be operational investment, and you know, that they separate from their salary cap essentially.
Can they? Or if somebody else might match it, Jay.
I will match. What is 0.0001% of 10 mil? 100 bucks. I got 100. You let Coach know, all right?
That won't help.
Fair enough. I'll send you their way.
You do better buying a Snicker.
But, yo, did I also hear that all of college might be in some trouble because, like, Title IX lawsuits are coming with the NIL stuff?
Yeah, that was expected. I mean, you know, how could it not be at this point? And it's still up in the air how that's going to go down. When you talk to people, though, they don't seem too concerned about that. You know, they're already budgeting, you know, $15 million or whatever it might be of that money to football and most of the rest to men's basketball. So just based on how the market is behaving, so to speak, I don't think that they think Title IX is going to make them split it 50-50. And I think, you know, regardless, you're going to see a lot of those non-revenue or Olympic sports start to dry up at some of these schools Whereas, you know, the rich schools like, say, in Ohio State or others will still have enough money to, you know, fully fund some of them. Whereas, you know, some of these schools where it's not a priority or just where it's a expensive sport without barely any return, you know, you might see some of those close up.
Gotcha. Wow. Talking with our boy Jeff Ehrman. Follow him at Jeff_Ehrman, E-R-M-A-N-N. Check out all the work at Inside MD Sports. He is the Maryland sports insider. Seriously, as a Terp that cares, there's a reason I always get Ehrman on the show. And what people may not know, Ehrman's a huge Skins fan, and his son's an even bigger one. So you get your own private line to ask me and Brian anything you want.
That's right. I told JP I wouldn't do this interview unless I got some commander scoop for my son, and you came through on that. So and you guys kill it. You guys kill it with the Commanders, too, all season long.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you, and we'll probably have to do this much more often now that football's over, and I'm going to pay attention to basketball.
Let's do it. Sounds great.
Thanks, buddy.
Okay.
All right. Jeff Ehrman, Inside MD Sports. Speaking of local college hoops, did anybody check the score of Georgetown St. John's last night?
No.
With 12 minutes left, Brian?
What was the score?
It was 32-3. Yo, I don't know what the final was, but it was like ugly, ugly. UGLY, you ain't got no alibi, you ugly. Mega Bets next.
All right, B. Mitchell Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Whenever we try to get ourselves educated in certain sports, or when we're dealing with certain teams, we call the experts in, and this is definitely an expert for the Washington Capitals. And joining us on the MGM National Harbor Listener Line on the Rude Guest Hotline, Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Let's talk to our guy, Joe Beninati. What's up, Joe? How you doing, brother?
Hey, B. Mitch, I'm doing great. North of the border, it's day 12 of a 12-day road trip. I think the guys are ready to go home. I know I am ready to come home, and they want to come home with one more win. They've been doing really well on the road all season, and especially so on this trip.
Joe, I think I mentioned to you before, I say, like in the past, I would see guys standing around waiting for Ovi to make plays. This team here, right now, they're not waiting around. He has a lot of help with them. And when on nights when he's not getting his goals with it, people are trying to take him out of it, his guys are stepping up for him. How much is that making this team even better?
No, it's absolutely the right point, Brian. The team has greater depth this season. They just do. Sure, they always know that they can count on number eight when the chips are down to provide goals. But this team has a collective group of offensive players that in the first 2 months of the season, they were downright frightening, B. Mitch. They were scoring goals at an alarming rate. That goal-scoring number has come down a bit in the last 6 weeks, but to their betterment, they've played the league's best defense. All of a sudden now, they're on top of the league in terms of goals against average, and as a result, they're right there with Winnipeg for the number one record in all the NHL. The depth of talent on this team is really good, and every coach, every scout, you know, we're in Ottawa today. The first thing they talk about is Washington's size across the board, big, physical, heavy team, and the depth at which they can produce points. And those are good things, good attributes to have.
Just like the Commanders, where they are farther ahead than people thought. And at one point, it looked like the Caps were like getting to a point where they had their nucleus, but a lot of those guys started to get hurt and they were out. And they were going to have to rebuild. Are they farther along now than what you expected?
Yeah, the interesting thing is they've never really used that word. They've never said rebuild. I think
recalibrate.
You know, Brian, sure, all those, you know, all the substitutes, right?
Yeah.
You know, Brian McClellan used an expression in the offseason before he handed the reins off to Chris Patrick as general manager that they were going to try and thread the needle, Brian. It was threading the needle between putting a new lineup together, retooling, what have you, but also remaining consistent and remaining competitive. They didn't want to see Alex Ovechkin chase Wayne Gretzky's all-time goal-scoring record on a team that was way down in the dumps on a rebuild. As a result, they brought in seven people in the offseason. They got younger. Their tempo of play is faster. they have threaded the needle perfectly to the point where now you're in, you're approaching the month of February and you're very much in consideration for President's Trophy for the best record in the NHL. You've been leading the Metro almost cover to cover. It's been wonderful to watch them work, and I think deservedly so. The coaching staff gets a great deal of the credit. Spencer Carberry has been fantastic. He and his staff have done a brilliant job of molding this team, which seemed to click right from the jump.
How often do you see something like that? Normally, when a team is at this point and they try to get younger, things don't work out as easy. So this is a rarity, right?
You mentioned it, Brian, though. You used the word core. There is and still is a tremendous core of players here from the championship-winning days of 2018. Yeah, those numbers are dwindling, but those guys, the players I'm talking about specifically, Ovechkin, Carlson, Wilson, those guys still are very, very impactful inside that dressing room. And TJ Oshie, Nick Backstrom, who are no longer playing with the team, who are on injured reserve, are also here. And on a day-to-day basis, they're just a phone call away or just a meeting room away from giving their impact and their input. And this team, I think, as it was constructed, was built to gel as fast as possible. And that's what they've done. There's been no mention of getting on the same page. They've been together as a unit from training camp. And all throughout it, there's been no lull. That's the thing that scares me, is that they haven't had the 3 or 4 game lull. There's no team that's been better after a loss this season. Mm-hmm. They're scary after they don't let one loss beat them twice. That's what they've been doing throughout, and I hope that they can continue that over the remaining, 32 games of the season, 31 games of the season.
Logan, Thompson, they extended him?
Deservedly so, yeah. B-Mitch, and handsomely so. And I think, if Logan got to the open market in the summertime, if he got to July 1 as a free agent, he probably would have brought in even more dollars than what he's coming in at. I believe it was 35.1 over 6 years. Obviously, this is an organization that meant a lot to Logan. It gave him an opportunity in a development camp a long, long time ago. He became an all-star out west with the Vegas Golden Knights. He's come to Washington. He's playing barely at the league minimum and has performed like the Vezina Trophy winner. And honestly, I could tell you, he's an MVP discussion.
Yeah.
He's been that good over the last 6 weeks where, if you're the top player on the top team, you deserve to be in the MVP discussion. And I know players like McDavid and Dreisaitl and MacKinnon are always going to be in consideration for that award. They're the front runners. But Logan Thompson will deserve attention if he continues to play at this level. His one-loss record is freaky. I mean, he's 23-2-3. That just doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, basically, when he's in net, you're winning for the most part.
Pretty
like
darn
90%,
good.
Something like that. So.
He's B-Mitch, he's won his last 11 starts. He won't go tonight. Charlie Lindgren will play tonight, from what I understand. But Logan's won his last 11 starts, and that next start could be the big head-to-head matchup this Saturday with Winnipeg when the team gets home.
As we look at the game tonight, they're playing against Ottawa Senators. What can we expect from this game? What are you looking for?
The funny thing is, 2 weeks ago, it was Logan Thompson. Logan Thompson shut the Senators out here 2 weeks ago. It was a nothing-nothing game. You don't see that very often through 60 minutes. Alex Ovechkin won the game with an overtime game winner. Alex is so opportunistic, B-Mitch. You don't see – this is not 25-year-old Alex Ovechkin anymore. This is 39-year-old Alex Ovechkin coming off of a significant leg injury. So the mobility isn't as electric as it used to be, but he is more opportunistic than ever. He's a very heady, smart player. He knows where to be, and his shot is extraordinary. So if you give him a chance, he buries the game winner. This team is interesting. Ottawa is a very, very fast team. So I think matchup-wise, it'll be an attractive game to watch tonight on Monumental Sports Network.
But the thing about Alex, like people look for one thing. He's been around so long now, man. He knows how to change it up on you a little bit. He's like the pitchers from back in the day with the Atlanta Braves. They didn't throw it very hard. Matt, he knew where to place it. And Ovi knows where to place it. Like that, the one he scored in overtime, it was a top net, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Down the off wing, high on the blocker side. I'm going to start calling Alex Ovechkin Maddox and Glavin now, thanks to you.
Man, look, the dude is great. I liked hockey because it was physical, but when I saw him, I really got into it because I loved it at that point because you watch a dude that big, that can skate like that, move like that, you got to be thoroughly impressed with it. But
so many times early in his career, people would come up to me, he's what, maybe 5'10", 190 pounds? I say, no, he's a Mack truck. He's like 6'3", 235 with all those moves.
Oh, middle linebacker.
He used to, Brian, hit like a linebacker on skates.
Yeah.
I think for self-preservation, he doesn't hit nearly as much, but he can still rock you.
Oh, yeah, he could definitely do that. So, Joe, we all expect Alex to break this record, and I'm thinking it's going to be this season, to be honest with you. As you look at it and you look at how he's been doing, and, you know, he could go on these spurts now, and I think another spurt or two are coming. When do you have, like, the expectation or a time when you think this could possibly happen? Because I know those tickets are going to be high as hell.
Yeah, I don't want to go there with you just yet, Brian. I'm trying not to sit on the fence with you here. It's just he would need to get smoking hot in the remaining games of the regular season to get there. Nothing would surprise me, though, because he's done absolutely everything you can imagine in the last 20 years to make the eyes pop out of your head. He's just when you say, no, it's going to happen next year, boom, he'll gonna go on a run where he gets 10 goals in a week and brings that target number closer and closer. Right now, as I sit here in Ottawa, I'm more prone to think that it might happen early next season. But again, he's the kind of player who is a streak jump shooter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy, you cab him out behind the three-point line, and he'll hit 12 in a row. And if that happens, then we will be talking about something, you know, late March, early April, where he could be on the precipice of it. I just, from what I see, I expect him to be in the mix, in the neighborhood, but I don't know about this season, Brian. I just don't. That's just me. Like I said, all it takes, though, is 1 6- or 7-goal week, and then we're right back to talking about, well, where are the projections going to fall? If it's going to happen, I think it's more likely late March, early April. But in my gut thinks it's early fall next season.
That fluke injury, man, messed up things.
Now, if that doesn't happen, he was playing so gosh darn well. If that doesn't happen in Utah in November, then we would be having the conversation. We would definitely be on the watch. That injury was significant. It sidetracked him. His mobility is coming back. He's skating better, but he was moving much better before the injury. And that did curtail some of this.
Now, Joe, I know when you're out on the road, you like to go on nice dinners, drink some nice wine. What's been the best dinner and the best wine you've had since you've been on that Canadian tour?
We've only been on the road 12 days, so there are a few meals to consider. Brian, I'll go back to just last night.
All right.
Just last night here in Ottawa, a restaurant called Fratelli, a really, really nice veal marsala dish that was awesome with a nice glass of Ripasso. It hit the spot.
Oh, there you go. So right now I'm getting my wife into it, drinking more wine. So what is like, because she used to be there, like all the, she liked all the fruity stuff. I told her she liked Kool-Aid, and now she's trying to try out the good stuff. So she's trying the good stuff. So what's a good one that you think she might like?
Well, first things first, try both red and white. Experience both of those. Like
she tried both of them, but she stuck to the red.
She stuck to the red. Yeah. It's funny, as I drink more wine, I tend to gravitate more towards white wines. I'm drinking more white burgundies than I've ever done before, and I really love those with seafood. But on the red front, I think when you're first getting acclimated to wine, red wine specifically, I would say Italian, French, and Napa. And if she likes bigger, bolder wines, she's going to go Cabernet Sauvignon.
Uh-huh.
If she wants to experience something that's a little bit more spicy, peppery, then I would advise for Syrah. And if it's the first course of the day, if it's with salads or maybe charcuterie, deli meats, cheeses, then I would start with Pinot Noir. But that,
well, that's my Pinot favorite
Noir,
right there.
Pinot Noir takes the time to get adjusted to learn the nuances of it. It's a very finicky grape. Everybody loves Cabernet right from the start. But for me, if you pin me down, I really like a really good Northern Rhone Syrah.
All right. I'm a Pinot Noir guy. I love it.
Can't go wrong there. Can't go wrong there.
I absolutely love those, man. Look,
keeps you light on your feet.
Yeah. See, when I was drinking Chateauneuf du Pape, that's a French wine, right?
That's a French wine. Yeah. The grape primarily is
Grenache. I didn't know a damn thing about it. I just liked the name, and I started drinking it.
A lot of people like Grenache. So that's Grenache, Syrah, and Mourvèdre together, and beautiful. That's more Southern Rhone. I'm partial to Northern Rhone, but when you go Chateauneuf du Pape, now we're going Southern Rhone, and you bring in some of the greatest wines of the world.
See, Joe, this is another thing you could do, man. You could have your own little podcast talking about wine, food, and hockey.
You, me, and JP. Let's go.
JP not going to talk about wine. He just like one thing, vodka. He likes vodka.
Oh, I can't help him there.
All right, Joe, man, I appreciate you giving us some time, man. Have a good trip, and I hope the Caps get a win tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks for sharing some time this morning.
All right, brother. Take care. That's Joe Beninati joining us here on B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7. You can follow Joe at X as at Joe BPXP. Listen, man, Joe has a lot of, let's just say, talents. The dude dresses his ass off. He can tell you where to go to the best restaurants. He can give you all kind of tips about wine and all those type of things, but when he starts talking about hockey, he is going to educate you. And I have called him on several occasions to ask stuff. And this is what I learned about some of the finicky hockey fans. I'm gonna tell you about yourselves. So when I first started doing some shows over at Comcast, I would like talk to Joe, Alan May, Smoking Al Koken, and get their opinions on stuff. And then I come to the air and I basically regurgitate exactly what the hell they told me. And you know what some of these old snobbish-ass hockey fans say? You don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, obviously you're the stupidest person in the world. Because one thing about me, I'm not going to the air and discuss something I don't know without talking to somebody that knows it. So if I don't know what I'm talking about, then Alan May don't know what he's talking about. Then Joe Beninati and Al Koken, man, they wouldn't have said it. Yes, they did say it. And then all of a sudden now they had to back off. Because what it is, hockey fans, like, they want to tell you what you can like. I like physicality. I've always loved it. And then as I began to learn hockey, I learned that it's not just about the physicality. It's about the grace, how smooth people can be. And I pick it up and I like it. But don't turn people away, because your sport can gain a lot more fans if you stop being so damn snobbish and silly. Okay? So, Joe B., thank you. Alan May, Smoking Al Koken, thank y'all too for educating me. And I found out that a lot of people in hockey that really talk about how much they're a hockey fan, they don't really know what the hell they're talking about. So we're going to take us a quick break here. We get back, and I'm going to see if I could get some hockey fans here. Because you know what? When you have the greatest player probably in a sport, when he's done, he probably will be that. And I want to find out from y'all, will you try to attend Ovi's game when he gets right there? When Joe B. says he thinks it'll be next year, he didn't want to put so much pressure on this year. Or are you going to try to get a ticket? Because, hell, I'm going to try. You know, I'm in the media. I might use that credential at that time, because I would love to be in the arena when he breaks that record. Because, you know, I've seen people go from just not liking him because to all of a sudden having to respect him because how damn great he's been. We're going to take us a quick break. We get back. 800-636-1067. Will you try to attend Ovi's record-breaking game? I'm going to ask these guys in the fishbowl as well. I know one guy's going to tell me definitely no, but we're going to see what the other guy's going to say. Always tomorrow, lean on me when you're not strong. Be Mitchell Finley, 106.7 The Fan. You could win an ultimate tournament trip to Las Vegas just by listening to 106.7 The Fan. Win a trip for you and three friends during the first two rounds of the College Basketball Championship. Flights, hotel, and $20,000 in spending money. Just download the free Odyssey app. Listen to The Fan for at least 1 hour. this tomorrow for at least an hour for another entry. It's Odyssey Slam Dunk in Vegas National Contest. For more, go to odyssey.com/slamdunk. Remember, flights, hotel, and $20,000 for you and four of your friends. Three of your friends. I don't want to get no extra person in there. That's a nice one. I wish we could win that, Lanfield. What you think? All right, so after talking about that, that's a tournament. It's a basketball tournament. Basketball is on my mind today because right now, Adam Silver is talking about, let's try to make him play just 10 minutes now. Basketball has gotten to a point where I know young people hate to hear older people say that they're softer now, they're not as tough. But let's think about this. Technology was non-existent for some of the great ones back in the day. Basketball shoes were garbage. They played every damn game, sick, hurt, or what. They didn't fly around in corporate jets that were plush. They didn't complain. Today, guys are making, the top dudes making anywhere 40, 50, 60, almost 70 damn million dollars a year. They don't want to play every game. Now they want them to be shorter. And Adam Silver seemed to be falling into it where the sport that's destroying it, they adding more. They added 17. They're trying to add 18 game, but they claim they worry about the fans, about the players' health. That's a bunch of BS. But are you all cool with this? You want 10-minute quarters now? They want to limit 8 minutes out of the game. My question, what is it in basketball in college, high school? Is it less or more?
It's 2 20-minute halves in college.
College is 2 20-minute halves. Okay, so you're NBA and you say you're getting paid. So shouldn't it be a little longer? What is high school?
I think 10.
So they want to do exactly what the high school students are doing.
Yeah, I think the idea is overseas they play 10, so they want to make it.
So in other words, now you're following what overseas does.
I think with all sports, they're trying to reduce the longevity of the game. Like their mind spans, they can only pay attention for so long. Just like with the baseball clock thing, I think they're just trying to speed up the game.
No, baseball should have been sped up. Baseball is the one sleeping pill of all sports. Not much action, and you're standing around, you're going to fall asleep. Basketball has enough excitement to where you can stay attentive for a whole game.
I think it depends on what you count as excitement.
No. See, this is the problem with basketball. They always have had something to fall on. Well, they didn't play well during the middle of the season. They played better when the playoffs came around. You know, then they don't play the All-Star game at all. Now they just shoot up threes all damn day, no defense. So now let's change it. I guarantee if they go to 10, somebody going to try to get to 8. Life is about this. When you are given multiple choices, we have learned that this generation chooses the easiest one. Don't give them a choice. This is what the sport is. You play or you don't play. Where the hell are they going to go? Play somewhere else? You know, listen, man, 12 minutes in basketball, it's cool. I think it's cool. Football, listen, I hear people complain about football today, and I'm going to be honest. They have everything better than what we had. And I didn't worry about no – listen, I wanted to play. I wanted to compete. So why is it that the more technology we get – we claim the athletes are in better shape. They're better athletic. They're more talented. But all they do is complain about every damn thing. I'm not cool with it. No. Play. If they change it to 10 minutes, they're going to try to take some money from them. I guarantee if they say we're going to lower your salary, they'll say, no. We'll play the 10 minutes. We'll play the 12 minutes now. I don't think listen, man, overseas, when did we start copying over what they're doing? The NBA is the end-all, be-all. Why don't you make them bastards follow what you're doing instead of you trying to follow what they're doing? It makes no sense. But, hey, it is what it is. Getting soft. I said it. Getting softer. They already soft. B. Mitchell Finley, 106.7 The Fan. We'll be back.